Hi, everyone. Raphael, a.k.a. Ronin Rafa, host of White Label American, is here. And it's my honor to introduce one of the most outstanding conversations that I've ever had. So, I've once mentioned attending a pastelist party, one of my most exciting moments since I moved to New York. But the last one I had attended was pre-pandemic. So, I've been looking forward to attending this event again, and it should have happened in 2024. But my kid fell sick, and our host had a baby, and I tried to be a responsible human being, so I wasn't going to show up, you know, after taking care of a sick kid and show up to a house with a baby. You don't want to do that. So I got to miss out on 2024. And then as soon as I found out that I received my invite for 2025, I was looking forward to this event. And then I thought about it, like, hey, I might be able to record. Why not bring my recording equipment? So I brought a recording equipment, and that's the result of this conversation that you are about to listen to. It got chaotic sometimes. It got personal sometimes. It got emotional sometimes. I did not expect that it would get, I'll get all of this. However, it's why I love doing what I do. And I hope that you will continue to support the work that I do and see the value of what I'm doing. And if you enjoy this conversation, please let me know. Give me feedback. I need your feedback. Reach out via whitelabelamerican.com. Hit the contact button. You can leave a written feedback, or you can use your voice. You know, I love to hear in writing or hear in your voice, your beautiful voice. Either works for me. And you can support us, you know, the multiple ways to support, either in donations, reoccurring donations, or you join us on Patreon. There's plenty more. There's no video of this conversation. I'll be upfront. There's no video. So even if you join us on Patreon, there's no video of this conversation. And I can't promise you that in 2026, that there will be a video of the conversation. The next time we have a conversation again, that I'll make a video. But I'll try. So enjoy this conversation. And yes, let me know what you think of this conversation. All right. Thank you, people. And also, before I forget, there's talk of suicide, bodily harm, and drug use in this conversation. And if you yourself or someone you know needs help, please, there are resources out there called the Suicide Prevention Line and other good organizations out there that are available. All right? Okay. Thank you, people, for your continued support. All right. Welcome to a brand new episode of White Label American. It's a special episode, extra special. And if you're not giving us money, this is why you should give us money, because this is, you can't find this anywhere. You can't find this. Whole of America, whole world. Even go to Joe Rogan, the biggest podcaster in the world. You can't find this. He need to pay us $200 million. But that's aside. Support this podcast. Give us gold. Give us dollars. Give us euros. Give us British pound sterling. Yeah, we'll take it. Swiss francs, we'll take too. But if you bring any currency outside of that, fuck you. We ain't gonna take that. All right? You're a racist. So give us 5 stars. If you give anything less than 5 stars, you're also a racist. So don't do that. Be a good person. All right? And you can make heaven. All right. So with that being said, I've a great panel with me today. It's a special venue. Sorry, I can't give you a video. I forgot to bring my webcam with me. Things happen, you know, when you're an indie podcaster, life happens. It's too cold out on the streets. But you'll find out why and where we are today in a few seconds. With that being said, I'm your host, the Ronin Rafa, a.k.a. Raphael, and the one and only host of White Label American, until I find a brand superb person who can be my backup co-host. But with that being said, let's not waste time. Let's dive in. It's the holiday season. That's the day we're recording, on the 6th of December, 2025. Close to the end of the year. Oh, not so, you know, let's just dive in. And sitting right next to me is an outstanding individual, illustrious guest. He's been on the podcast before and great host for today's episode. And please tell us who you are.
How you guys doing? My name is Daniel Perez, and we are here today to at my home where we are celebrating a pasteles party, which is a celebration of Puerto Rican culture where we come together, we share drinks, we share food, a little bit of blood sometimes, and you know, have a great time and celebrate the end of another wonderful year.
Fantastic, fantastic. And you've heard some other voices in the background, so let's capture who they are and, yeah, just find out who they are. So beginning from, let's go to the right.
Hello, my name is Marcos Dominguez. I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I am possibly, maybe partially a comic relief kind of person, but not the very best. But we'll be here for this. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, Marcos. Also, first timer on the podcast, and thank you for giving us your time. And let's find out who the next person is.
Hey, what's good, y'all? My name is Daquan Mays. I am a Army veteran, New York City resident, and a lover of cheesecake.
Can't go wrong with cheesecake. Or is it just the cake? We'll find out. So, yeah. All right. Last but not the least, he was here on time. Is he the sexiest guest? We'll find out. All right. Introduce yourself, please, and tell us.
Don't break anything.
Yeah, don't break anything, man. Come on.
Yes, this is Rodney Lugo, Army and Army Reserve veteran, and somebody's coming through the door now.
Uh-oh. All right. Yeah.
I must run.
Yeah. But, yeah, we're good. We're good. So we are celebrating pasteles, and this is an event that I got introduced towards the right before the pandemic. I'd never experienced this, but it reminded me of making moin moin, for those of you of Nigerian heritage or background, and it was just beautiful. And thanks to Daniel Perez for introducing me to this, and I was like, man, this is just beautiful, being around family, being around culture. And Daniel's dad is somebody who I have to get on the podcast, because, man, apart from making some awesome coquito, you know, he was just accepting when I showed up. So yeah, it's something that I never forgot. And my kid was around 2 years old then, and we've shared a lot of bonds, myself and Daniel, but it's just one of my favorite memories of being in New York. And part of the way I knew New York is my home. So with that being said, we're going to talk about holidays and our time in the military. But before we dive into that, let me see. I decided to cheat a little bit and pull up some of my cheat card questions. Don't worry, you won't see anything on the back. It's all in the front. So how did your childhood shape your military experiences when it comes to holiday memories? And for the audience, we had tried to record earlier and some fun experiences happened. So
many things happened. Yeah. Not have happened.
Yeah. So, like, yeah. So I twisted the question that I began with.
Yes.
So they weren't expecting this. So now the looks on their faces were like, what? So who would like to go first?
Sure. I mean, it's Daniel Perez here. It feels Perez. Daniel Antonio Perez. It kind of hurt a little just because, and we're all here at my home with a lot of my family, and we always had a very boisterous, fun time during holidays. So military holidays felt a little muted to me, which kind of sucked. But, you know, it's something you persevere through, and that's life. But, yeah, they felt different. They felt very different.
And for the audience, what branch in the service did you serve?
USMC.
No.
Fuck you.
Well, you gotta remember.
Where my fucking crayon?
Well, you gotta remember the audience are not military. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. So it's it could be a struggle, but you know, sometimes you're away from family and friends and you miss them, and it's
I meant USMC.
United States Marine Corps.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're also known as people who sometimes eat crayons for allegedly.
Because the rest of y'all can't handle the crayons. That's all.
Valid. If
the Marine does not tell you they have a favorite flavor, they're a little bit too rough for their own good. They're not fun. They want to beat you up right away.
So, who else wants to go?
So, in my spec of things, when it came to celebrating the holidays in the military, there was a sense of brotherhood that I didn't experience outside in the civilian world. A lot of times, my family has gone on to do different things, and it's really rare times that we got together versus within the military. You're surrounded by X amount of people at any given time, and a lot of us sometimes don't go home to our families. So we try to come up with our own holidays and our own special way of celebrating around the holidays. For example, one time I was in Iraq for Thanksgiving, and a lot of us didn't really like the turkey that they gave us, so we decided to like throw that out, and we went down to a local area. We bought some goat. One of our friends who from Jamaica, he made us curry goat, and you know, we ripped up a whole bunch of MREs, like put some this and that together with a bunch of chili mac and et cetera, and we made it do what it do. Had some probably one of the best Thanksgivings I had on the side of a mountain, and then it was great. Like, we had a great time. Like, it was great music. The locals came up and celebrated with us, even though they're not really the best. They didn't know Thanksgiving like that, but like, we had a good time. Like, we ate really well. And then the next day we got shot at. So it was a good, overall good time. Yeah.
Got a turkey leg in your mouth.
So what was wrong with the turkey that you didn't like it?
Nah, the turkey was too damn dry, and somehow the cook that we all fuck with did not know how to cook the turkey at the time. I'd never seen a turkey well done in my life. It looked like a well done steak. I don't know how you cook turkey well done steak. Exactly,
cooked to Army standards.
The turkey blacker than meat.
On Army standards. Fucker looked like well done steak.
Exactly.
White, dark meat, which is still white.
How you cook dark a turkey black. Well done?
See. Unlike you, during my time in the holidays, I had a Jamaican cook.
Oh, okay.
Well, excuse
me. Well, you over here fancy.
Yeah, man. So I get like 10, 20 pounds. during the holidays, because she cooks so fucking well, when she needed help with the kitchen, we all raise our hands like, yes, indeed, sir.
Did she look good?
No. Oh. But she was Jamaican, so we gave her a pass in that respect. But the cooking was excellent. We had
Jamaican.
Did
she look good?
Nah, she was an older type. You know, I was in my 20s. You know, she was had a couple. We was in our 20s. She was a sergeant. We was like, but the cooking was up.
That ain't no problem.
You know what? We've been a few
you
for
six. You haven't met any young Jamaicans, have you?
Yeah. I have. Okay, she wasn't like that.
What's your problem?
What's the problem? Are you fucking up out here?
Well, what he's trying to say is that he liked them young. He don't like them old. He don't want to be a kid. What do they call them? A cat man. Is it cat man or?
I know what you're trying to get
out. No, he's not a man who can be taken care of. You know, he doesn't like
he
that.
No sugar daddy.
No, he don't want a sugar mama. Which I'm sorry, man. You gotta get with the times. Get with the times. You deserve to be taken care of. Not only the VA got to take care of you. You just man, see, this is why the Air Force keeps winning, man. If it was an Air Force guy. An Air Force guy wouldn't have had a problem. He would have said, "Oh yeah, I get it. Yeah, she's beautiful," and he would have, because I have Air Force friends.
It'd be like that.
One of them looking like 50 right now, but he's actually way younger than me. I saw his photo yesterday, and I was like, God damn. But he's a kept man. Oh, yeah, kept. That's the word. Kept man.
Kept man. Yeah.
Kept man. There's nothing wrong with being a kept man.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, being a kept man, is you deserve to be a kept man. But you know about our life. It's all right. Go work hard. Work hard. Navy is work smart, not hard. That's the goal. If you listen to the podcast, work smart, not hard. But some of you don't deserve that, so keep donating to the podcast. We get it. Yeah. Yeah. And let me know, listeners, what your childhood was like. You know, if you served in the military, well, we appreciate you. Thank you for your service. But, yeah, let us know. We'll let you know. But, yeah, anybody got something new to add about childhood and the military?
So my time growing up, before I even joined the service, was a very hectic, fight-consumed one-bedroom apartment in New York City. Yeah. So you have two adults, five kids, two of which are still babies. Oh. Yeah, the youngest one's 7 years younger than me. The one after that is 3 years younger than her, so it's 10 years between me and the baby. So you have the first three that are born, you know, they're still doing ish, kind of trying to figure out life. But at the same time, they're fighting over every little thing. So every holiday is a battle of you do this, that, whatever you can think of. I'd rather be in a war zone celebrating anything than being back at home. And yeah, yes, the turkey was dry, but there was some quiet-ish times, except for when I was in Afghanistan it was Iraq. I can't forget because I literally went between 6 months apart between one and the other. So mortars came in, and yeah, dinner had to come with me to the bunker. Yep. So mind you, I wasn't infantry.
Yeah.
I was just a plain old mechanic. So whenever shit needed to get fixed, I was there. But in Iraq, I worked at a morgue for 6 months. Oh. Yeah, so I saw the aftermath. Yeah, I'm good. But
I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah.
I've never met a guy. Well, that explains a lot. I've never met a guy who came out of morgue duty normal, and so, but that's rough.
I tried to be normal. Well, which is why.
Now, well,
okay, that's a valid point. Stop announcing it to everybody, please.
I like this.
Cheers!
Year,
so. Cheers!
Cheers! Cheers!
I'm
happy. That's a rough gig.
Afghanistan literally was different in reference to being able to deal with the people that I was actually around. Mm-hmm. They were a lot better. The team and people that I was around just in general at the small base was more like a family than me being at home. Didn't matter about the food. It was just the people that I was around.
Yeah.
The holidays to me aren't about the food. It's always about the people. I mean, look at who I'm around right now. I'm down around y'all four maniacs to begin with, but it's still a fun time. It's more about being around the people that I like and actually don't mind getting my ass handed to me or vice versa, handing it to them. But it's fun. It's joy.
Amen.
I mean, everybody's here has dealt with me, so I'm sorry for y'all.
Whether we like it or not.
Hey, Rodney, would you like to add something to that?
No.
Too cool for school.
So, after you got out of service, what was your first holiday like?
So, my first holiday out, I was actually spending it homeless. And just to give some context to that, when I got out of the military, I didn't know that the Army wasn't going to take care of you like I thought I was when I was active. And when I finally got out, after serving 6 years active and two deployments, I thought that, you know, maybe the Army would at least take care of me. They would at least help me with a resume, get me something to like stabilize myself. And then all I got was an ARCOM or an Army Accommodation Medal for those who don't know. And maybe a couple of dollars that my platoon was nice enough to give me, got a handshake. And next, you know, I was outside of base going, well, I need to figure out life afterwards. So my transition was really difficult. It got to the point where I developed a severe pillow and alcohol addiction. And I spent the holidays like trying to fight that off. And succumbing myself to a severe depression and ultimately attempting to off myself twice during the holidays, just because a lot of survivor's guilt and depression that really got to me over the times. And I didn't realize that I suppressed a lot of that stuff until I got out, and my demons was getting the best of me at the time and nearly got the best of me until I finally decided to go get some help and another veteran helped me get back on my feet. And I probably wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for him. So shout out to him wherever he may be at. So yeah, that was my time spent during the holidays once I got out.
So how did you find a person, speaking to you, Daquan, how did you find a person that told you you needed help, and how did you know that you were ready for help? Because I was almost in a similar boat to you after I got out of active duty. But there's one thing I've come to realize in the current mental state that I'm in, that you can't help somebody who's not ready for help until they accept that they want help. So how did you know that you were at that point that you needed help?
Yeah. So it was at a time where I was just living outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And I was jumping between bando to bando. Or for those who don't know, it's an abandoned house where a lot of drug dealers normally sell drugs at. So I got cool with the drug dealer at the time where he allowed me to stay at one of his bandos, you know, on the exception that like I just watched the drugs and the money for him while he go out and do his thing. There was one Saturday afternoon I remember. It was really humid. It was hot. I went to the community center nearby to go get something to eat because they normally serve like lunch and breakfast like for everybody. So I went there, met this Vietnam veteran / Desert Store veteran who got out after like 20, 25, 30 years of service. And he was doing odd jobs at the time. His name was Earl. Everybody in the community center knew him. Like, he was a big, husky, like 6'5". Like, you couldn't miss him. Like, definitely built like he should have been in the NFL after he got out. So I remember I sat across from Earl and we just like kind of just shot some small talk, found out that we both served just in different times. And I guess he realized like something in me was off and he was like, hey, you know, do you need help? And I'm like, it took me a while to just say, yes, I actually need help, because I think to me, looking back at it, I realized that it was hard for me to just ask people for help in general. I was so used to being hyper independent at the time. I thought that like I can handle whatever was wrong with me. And I didn't realize until somebody pulled me aside and be like, hey, you are going down a really downward spiral and you really messing up out here. And you need to like kind of step back and realize that like, hey, you messing up. And it wasn't until Earl like kind of like pulled me aside like one night that I was just hanging out with him. And he was like, hey, brother, like, You need help, and I'm willing to help you, but you need to realize that you need the help in order for me to help you. And it took me until after my second attempt at suicide where I realized that I needed help. I came back to the community center later on that summer towards the end of the fall season, and I remember I ran into Earl that afternoon, and he was just helping out, like passing food. And I was like, hey, I could really use your help. I'm kind of at my wit's end. I don't know what to do at this point. I thought I had it handled, but I didn't. And he was like, okay, cool. So, you know, come over after this and I'll help you out. So from there, I lived with Earl for a couple of months. He put me in this like one shack. He had like a 3-bedroom house. His kids already moved out and moved on with life. So like I stayed in one of his eldest son's room at the time. And, you know, I went with him to like go do some odd jobs. We went down to the VA in Atlanta. It's like for me to just like eventually like wean myself off for like pills and like severely cut back my alcohol addiction. I would say it took me probably about a year or so to like finally kick the bucket, especially with the pills thing, because that was like the thing I used to do the most, more than alcohol. And on top of that, I was also smoking. So it took me probably about a year to 2 years to like finally quit smoking and cut back on pills. And as far as alcohol, I kind of went from like drinking like a bottle and a half a day to maybe like a cup or two today at this point. At that point, yeah, it was like a really hard time, just like trying and then like kind of relapsing and then trying again, relapsing. And when I finally felt like, okay, I'm finally getting it right, felt like things started to slowly fall in place for me. And looking back at it, I think it really helped me like just build like resilience and realizing that sometimes you may not got it like yourself, and it's okay to reach out to help, especially if you're going through something mentally, physically, emotionally, or financially, or all of the above. You know, definitely reach out to help if you got somebody who has your back and wants the best for you, and you just tell them like, hey, I need the help. Like 9 times out of 10, like there's people out there who's really willing to help. You just got to go out there and get it.
Yeah, shout out to L. Because we appreciate people like that. We appreciate people like that who always, yeah, they stand up for us. They understand us, they relate to us, and they fill in the words for us when we are not capable of
doing it ourselves
or saying it ourselves. Yeah.
People like Earl know where we are. And understand that we are not the ones, or Earl is not the one that can actually say, take my hand. He can only say, I'll give you my hand, but it's up to you to take it, to say, hey, I'm ready for the help, ready for the guidance. Because most of us are hard-headed assholes.
Also, like to add on to that, just to give a bit of context to earlier, Earl also suffered from also severe depression. He also attempted to commit suicide itself. So he's been there. And I, to this day, I don't know what it took him to get from that place to where he was at when he met me, but I can only imagine. But I know like if it took somebody like from him to get from that dark place to where he's at, I know from like personal experience and how he's helped others. There's people like him who are capable of being able to help others and just be able to give out that hand and tell them like, hey, I'm willing to help you if you like, you just reach out.
That's why it's always important. I didn't have an L when I was going through mine. That's how I ended up in Texas. And, you know, I just was told, come down here. They love military. It's great. And I showed up there. I lost all my savings. Everything I was told, it was reality check for me, and that asking for help was really difficult. And yeah. Now I'm in a place I don't know anybody. I don't have any
support.
No support. The person who brought me there kind of swindled me, and then you're like, I'm smart. You know, I'm not supposed to be. And just even the VA. In Dallas wasn't like the VA in Manhattan or Brooklyn. I've gotten much nicer treatment there. Mm-hmm. So it was it just seemed like everything just was crashing on me at the same time. So even if somebody had showed up like an L, I don't think I was even going to listen to the person at that moment.
There's no way in hell you were.
Until it got to the point where I looked at my bank account and it was like $100 left. And I was like, okay, I need to go get unemployment, which there was a big stigma in my community, which I deserved. I qualified. It's not like it's a bad thing, but because of the stigma, like, you know, oh, you're getting unemployment. So, you know, so I quietly took it. And, you know, but because of their system in Texas, I had to go to the office. And when I went there, they were like, oh, you're a veteran. Oh, we have a veterans help office. Gentleman, they was like, oh, you want employment? I was like, yeah, anything to get me off this thing, man. I don't want to be on this thing. He was like, well, I could get you something, but it's in security. I was like, do I got to carry guns in Texas? Hell no. I was like, oh, it's a gated community. You know, you just been in a patrol car, called a big amount of money. I was like, oh, sounds good. Man, that shit was like $10 I ended up getting. But I was at the bottom. I didn't care. And when I went for the interview, they were like, oh, that guy sent you? Yeah. They didn't even look at my resume. They were just like, oh, yeah, you got it. When do you want to start? I was like,
And when I showed up to the company, I still got people from the company on my LinkedIn to this day. They're like, man, this guy was so professional. There was an Army vet who, you know, and it's not a shade to Army, but the Army vet was there. And, oh, yeah, yeah. Army vet was there, and he didn't, I don't even know if I should call him an Army vet, because I don't think he served up to a year before he was kicked out.
Yo, boy.
He was kicked out. I know he was kicked out. Yeah, he's one of those. And he was my supervisor. And when I showed up, people at the company were like, there's something different between you are a veteran, he's a veteran, because he was claiming to be a veteran and all that. I'm not going. And I'm looking at him, but they were like, your uniform looks outstanding. Everybody in the company just gravitated to me. And he got mad. But I was just like, it's a job. I do my job. Get out of here. That's it. But there were even women throwing themselves at me. But that's how depressed I was. They didn't care. I didn't even. I get back home. I'm just drinking alcohol. That's it. It was later down the line that I realized that, man, I was like complaining women don't love me online. I was writing that on my Facebook.
Damn.
I hate women hate me and all that stuff. Meanwhile, when I look back, I was like, man, there were women throwing
alcohol,
themselves.
Coquito abuse.
Yeah, coquito abuse just happened here. So. It's, you know, one day I ran into somebody who was just like, you know, you sound really nice and bright. Shouldn't you be in college? I was like, well, I don't think a university would take somebody like me. And that woman talked to me, and that's how I ended up at Strayer University. But I felt I was played at the end of the day. But I was just, I can't even describe what I was, but it felt like I was drowning in something, a dark well or something. But somehow something led to something, and two former a shipmate and a Marine friend of mine were both like, "Hey, you need to come out from Texas. You don't sound normal."
Like you're
Yeah. One was Seattle, one was New York, and I ended up choosing New York.
Amen. Welcome.
That's how you know when I arrived here. When I arrived at the VA for my checking. I remember the nurse looking at my record and saying, it doesn't, why are you on 0%? It doesn't sound right. You shouldn't be on zero. And I was like, fuck y'all. Y'all don't care? And I was using the Dallas VA treatment.
As your example.
Yeah, to respond to Manhattan.
This is in a sense, a plug and a help for the New York or the VA in general. I've heard enough stories from people outside of the New York VA saying that they're the worst. There's so much everything else in between. I was born and raised in New York. I've traveled around the U.S. and everything else in between. And I've been to a couple different VAs everywhere else. And I'm like, nothing compares to the New York VA. At least I live in Westchester, New York. And the VA up there isn't as nice as the one in Manhattan. Yep. And no disrespect to any other VA in general, but... The New York VA, yes, they're busy. They have a lot of people there. But the doctors and everybody else cares about the person. Not yes. That you're a veteran.
True.
They care about you. They want to get to know you, get you to do your stuff. They want to make sure you get every last red cent the government owes you because of the fact that you already gave up to, if not more, depending on who the actual veteran is, your life. You sign a dotted line to say, hey, I want to serve the United States of America, no matter who the fuck is in power, because we have some crazy people in power.
Oh, God.
But you served. You were actually willing to say, hey, I'm going to give my life for you to keep doing your stupid shit. For you to be able to be that egomaniac that, no disrespect to you, the bum. To be able to be a homeless person. This guy over here, Daquan, was like, oh, shit. I serve my nation. I don't know any better.
That's crazy work.
Daquan over here gave his serve.
The bar is here now.
Sent the mechanic to the infantry.
Now. But go ahead.
This guy did more than most of us did, honestly. Okay, all right. I am a pogue. I was a mechanic. But I'll give you this. There's a difference. I'm back home on home base. I'm fixing shit for the infantry guy. The infantry guy is sitting at home, sweeping floors and doing shit, not doing jack shit for the whole goddamn day.
Yep.
For the rest of the time, he's actually out there doing it. But when he goes out to war, he does more shit than I do.
Because we actually do our job. Yeah.
Correct. That's like the only goddamn time you do.
Yes.
I do mine every single day of the goddamn week. No. But I will never, ever pick on an infantry guy.
Except
friends,
for right,
except for right now.
Yeah, of course, because he's not doing that shit anymore.
Hey, we know when to pick on infantry, but not when they're holding a weapon too.
No. I will take advice.
But yeah, so, and you know, it was until I started going to the VA in New York that I realized that. You know, I saw that this is what hospitals could look like for everybody, not just only veterans.
Correct. But that one actually looks, if you hit certain floors,
yeah, it looks
like it's abandoned.
Yep, yep. I get it. No, but
New York, VA.
Yeah, I'm talking, but it brought me to that light because I have family from other countries, especially in Europe, and when they talk about the treatments, the hospitals, and I'm like, man, jeez, you know, they're always like, why y'all don't have, why is it so crazy for hospital care in America? It's so expensive. And I'm like, man, you know, we're not going to go there. Let's just talk about freedom.
He said freedom.
Yeah.
The New York VA in Manhattan, at least, is where you can literally go from your doctor's appointment, go get your blood drawn, go get your x-rays, in less than 45 minutes.
True.
I've been there. I've done it. I've literally gone from my doctor's appointment. It's like, hey, this is hurting. This is this. I need to check this out. Okay. Go here. Your referral is already done. Just show up. You can probably get it even done today before you even go to your next job or whatever you got to go get done. Mm-hmm. I was like, what? Yeah. Oh, okay.
I've done that multiple times, so I can testify to that. But anyway, we got to wrap up. Otherwise, the Pastelis Mafia are going to come get us. So, final word. We got to wrap up. We'll definitely do a part two, and maybe I'll get you all in the studio. But what's one thing you'd like to leave the audience with, holiday season of 2026? What's something you'd like to leave the audience with? We'll start with Rodney.
Happy holidays.
That's it? Man, this guy. That's why he's wearing shades, yeah. Claiming at past 7 p.m., but he's staying in his medical shades. But we're going to see about that. What testimony? He might be a vampire. We'll let him in by mistake.
This is Rodney.
Yeah.
He's a vampire.
This is Rodney.
Yeah. We'll let him in by mistake. Yeah. All right.
Same sentence, all right?
It's final word.
Oh, it's about that time? Yeah. All right. So I'll make this real quick. For those who are planning on celebrating the holidays this year, and for those who don't, definitely take the time out to reach out to your friends, your family, your loved ones, or somebody that you haven't reached out to in a long time. Just let them know that, like, hey, you know, either you're still thinking about them, like you just reach them out to say hello, because you never know what people be going through around the holidays, especially around this time of year. A lot of people suffer from seasonal depression for one reason or another, and sometimes some people just need to just be reached out to, either to laugh, to cry, or just need to just vent. So don't be afraid to reach out to that person or older people, even if you don't like them or you may not have the best relationship. But hey, just let them know that hey, you're still thinking about them regardless.
I don't like you. How the fuck you do?
I'm not sure about reaching out. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like you, but I'm not sure if I will reach out to you. But if you can, please do. Yeah, please do.
Hey, I don't fucking like you.
But I
hope it's bad.
You weren't here when I asked the final question, but to wrap it up, what would you like to leave the audience with for holiday season or for even 2026? Final thing you'd like to leave the audience with?
Super easy. People are everything. Human connection is what makes us human and happy and makes life worth living. So enjoy the life you get between now and when you die. And my wife is going to kill us because we're not making pasteles, so we got to go. Bye.
That's his way of saying no to AI.
The Union Buster is back. The Union Buster is back, so live long and prosper. Make sure that you take care of yourself. If you're an introvert, take it slow. If you're a goddamn extrovert, go out and party, but do not be an idiot.
All right. Well, we have Pa Tony here, Tio Tony, Papa Tony, and he's gonna give us the last word on the podcast. So, yes, you tell us what you want to wish the people for the holiday season and for 2026.
I wish that everybody was here to make help us make pasteles, but since you're not, I wish you felicidades, mucho amor, and may God bless you all. But I gotta get these MFs back to work. All right.
That's perfect. And check out his coquitos. This is the best. It's the best.
Tio Tony's classic coquito. Just contact my son Daniel.
All right. You heard that. You can't get... It's the best. Trust me. All right. Thank you. Thank you for the privilege of your company. All right. I got to go make pasteles. Bye.
Thanks for listening to White Label American. If you enjoyed the show, please give a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. You can follow the show on all social media platforms. Visit the White Label American website for links for donations, episodes, feedback, guests, merch, and newsletter. Don't forget to download the free White Label American app on the Google Play Store and Apple coming soon. Thank you for the privilege of your company.